We call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Budget Committee to order, and I'll have the clerk take the roll.
Representative Junkie?
Here.
Representative Welty?
Here.
Representative Finstad? Representative Doty?
Here.
Representative Faust?
Here.
Representative Hamilton?
Here.
Representative Hansen?
Here.
Representative Heidgerken? Representative Magnus?
Here.
Representative Owen?
Here.
Representative Otremba? Representative Peterson?
Here.
Representative Poppy?
Here.
Representative Shemansky?
Here.
All right. Reminder, everyone, shut the cell phones off. If they go off, we'll collect a dollar from you in our collection jar over here that'll help pay for coffee. And there is coffee over here if anyone wants some on the committee or in the audience. Help yourself to a cup as long as it lasts. It's yours. Members, we have in your packet three committee minutes to approve. Representative Faust moves approval of the minutes from January 10th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those are approved. And Representative Magnus moves the minutes of January 16th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those minutes are approved. And one more, we have Representative Doty moves the minutes of January 17th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those are adopted. You do have information, members, in your packet. As you can see, we have a lot of special guests in the audience today. We're going to review the, as you know, the governor laid his budget out, and while we have a ways to go for the February forecast and then targets to follow some 3 or 4 weeks after that, so we have a lot of time, but I think it's good today and tomorrow to get an overview from the departments of what they're proposing. So as we're going around the state and to our districts, we can talk about these things and start thinking about them. So we've actually asked the commissioner, he's here somewhere, I believe, please join us at the table. Commissioner Dyrud is here today, and I think he's just going to, I've allowed him to do whatever he wants in the next hour and a half. So feel free to ask questions of him as we go along. I assume that'll work. We're going to get it on the table. The budget is fairly interesting this year for Veterans Affairs, and there was also an additional initiative laid out a week or two ago on some other things, and I believe we're going to touch base on all those things. The screen behind blinks a little bit, but I think it will clear up as we go. At least it did the other day when we used it. So, Commissioner, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed as you see fit.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Clark Dyrud, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. Seated with me at the table today is Christine Keel, who is our Legislative Director. And I, again, thank you for the opportunity. I pointed out to you, Chair, as we began, this is our first year in agriculture, and you folks move quickly. this is the earliest we have made a budget presentation in our recent history. So I don't know whether to be impressed or whatever about this, but we, again, thank you for the opportunity.
We're just keeping you on your toes, Commissioner.
Pardon me?
We're keeping you and your department on your toes.
Exactly. Very much so. And I want to really thank you formally for bringing the committee over to see us in our turf. You don't know how much that meant to us, to just talk face-to-face about a little bit about what we do. So thank you so much for that. And today I'm pleased to talk to you about our base budget for fiscal year 06 and 07, as well as our budget requests for 08 and 09. And you should have three handouts. One would be looking like this. It says Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs budget presentation. Today you should have a copy of this one, and you should have a copy of the budget pages, which you might have already had in your packets. If you don't, you do have them,
yep.
I see. And then you should also have the report to the legislature on the higher ed offices. You should have a copy of that as well. So those are the three documents you should have. This morning I'm going to be speaking primarily from the first one we talked about. And don't worry, I'm not going to read it to you. So we should be able to move along here. I would like to first give you a little bit about our department at a glance, and then our base budget, and then about our change requests. So again, looking to page two, we have, again, a little summary, and this is review for many of you that came over to the department. You know, we were created in 1943. Our mission, and I will read that, to serve the veterans of Minnesota, their dependents, and survivors, and to secure all benefits and services afforded them under state and federal law. So we are, that is sort of our mission. We serve, it says, Minnesota's 460,000 veterans. That number comes down almost every year. The VA, the federal VA, United States Department of Veterans Affairs, adjusts those numbers. Those numbers have come down. However, what is not included in that are the dependents and survivors. So that population then becomes over a million people served by either veterans or dependents. So our agency profile, we are split into three divisions: benefits, services, and departmental operations, and we'll be speaking about them in that order. The general fund base budget for fiscal year 06 and 07 was $12.1 million, and I think what's real, we're looking at that towards the bottom on page two, and I think what's real interesting to note is fiscal year 06, we were $4.7 million, and fiscal year 07, it went to $7.4 million. So we had a dramatic increase this past year, which has caused us, the growing pains. We have that old line, be careful what you wish for, you might get it. We have really been scrambling in the last year, and I think we have done an excellent job. We will be talking about that as we move forward. But we had a lot to do as a small agency to move ahead. Historically, we did not ask for any increases all throughout the 80s and 90s, and so we have been flying below the radar, and the whole issue of veterans and their needs have become just exploded exponentially with the war in Iraq, and so we have catching up to do. So as I point out to the chair ahead of time, some of the percentage increases look eye-popping, but if you're starting with 25 cents, a 10% increase, a 20% increase sounds impressive, but in real dollars, it doesn't. It's, as you see, we're not nearly as large as some of the other agencies. Let's just put it that way. Breaking down benefits to $6 million, services, $1.8 million, department ops, $4.7 million. So the core mission, going on page three, the core mission of our benefits division, as you see the following bullets, there's the State Soldiers Assistance Program, the CVSO County Veterans Service Officer Grants, War Orphans Education Benefits, and Veterans Preference Act. Now, the State Soldiers Assistance Program, which then goes on to the next section there, that was our core mission. The State Soldiers Assistance Fund was created in 1943. This is the money goes right into the pockets of the neediest veterans. And this, we view the State Soldiers Assistance Program as a safety net for the neediest of veterans. It doesn't recreate, it doesn't add, if they qualify for some other program, they do not qualify for funds from the State Soldiers Assistance Program. There are sort of three main areas within there. One is a temporary assistance for a veteran who's laid up to qualify for Social Security disability or even general assistance. There are waiting periods. There are general assistance. They have to pauperize themselves. They have to get rid of assets to qualify for a temporary situation. This maximum six-month period, we help out during a time of need for a veteran. We also provide dental and optical services for various for the neediest of the veterans, and that is something that normally they do not qualify for in any other program. That is kind of a need, so we are able to help some people who are on very, very fixed income, unable to get that type of service. So we help veterans and widows who are old, living on fixed incomes, or the working poor. That is another class that we see. So someone, a younger veteran with a large family, just is not able to provide dental or optical care. So those are the targets. It's the working poor and the aging population. We also added last year, we added a category called special needs. It was designed primarily for the new returning veterans, but it, of course, is open to all veterans. And this is the category where someone it does have a job, for example, or is returning to a job, but has something that arises of a crisis nature financially. And we are able to help with its special needs. We don't list what it is because it can be anywhere. And the equivalent in the National Guard would be the Military Family Foundation, which is there to help for emergencies that happen while they are in the Guard. We don't have anything like that on the veteran side. So when they leave the Guard, the special needs is exactly mirrors the Military Family Fund for people in the Guard. So this is something that is relatively new, just started last year.
Commissioner?
Yes?
Couple things. I think you said it, but would you repeat it? Is this a one-time shot that you get at these, or is it based on a calendar year, or how often could a veteran apply and get this benefit?
The temporary disability is kind of as per occurrence. If someone is disabled sort of permanently, they would move on to Social Security or other VA programs, 6 months maximum. It isn't entirely conceivable that, say a guy self-employed, say, over-the-road trucker, breaks a leg, you know, half a year later breaks a leg again. So, I mean, there is a possibility of a repeat customer there. Dental and optical, we have guidelines. You can only, it's a certain dollar amount, and it is, you can only use it per year. And so there are very strict guidelines on that, and it's very much needs-based. So, and then the special needs, that is a one-time lifetime right now. I mean, so it's not, I mean, someone could not come with a special need twice a month or, you know, or several times a year. This is truly a special need. It's a one-time.
There a cap on that benefit?
Right now, well, what we did is within our budget here, you see, budget is 4.9, but within the budget, we started last year with fiscal year 07 is what I mean. We are in the middle of that. That's when we first started it. We temporarily put aside $300,000. See how far that goes. If it goes beyond that, we will revisit it. We will adjust it. We are not going to let special needs run our budget dry. We are going to watch that. And yes, we watch that very closely. It is a very great program to have, and it gives the county service officers a tool, because as the county service officers take the initial application for this program. So that we are not staffed to, a veteran cannot call us up and say, hey, I'd like to apply for something. We just are not staffed to provide that kind of service. But the staff we have for this program actually administers the grant itself. So county service officers see the veterans take the applications. And this was, for years, it was $1.4 million a year. Last year, a $3 million increase was asked for. $2 million was given. And so, per year, this 4.9, it's a skewed. It used to be 1.4, and now it is actually 3.4. So that's how you get up to rounding. It goes up to 4.4. So there was a big increase. We did not get this in place until August of 06. The money was available July of 06, and we had to hire and train staff. We completely redid the guidelines. We had not done any cost of living increases or change the program for probably 15 years. So very few people are qualifying. So we had to redo the guidelines. We tie them into federal programs, you know, income and asset limits, so we have a justifiable reason for why we are picking the limits we have. We will follow the cost of living increases on those income and asset guidelines as we move forward. So part of that, and then we have the issue of training county service officers to get used to it. Some of them jumped into the fray very quickly, and some of them are needing more training. So, and by the way, I would like to point out we have two county service officers present in the audience today. We have the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, Steve Stone, if you'd stand. He happens to reside in Representative Olin's district. He's from Thief River Falls. And see, the next one is Bob Davis from Goodhue County. He is their legislative chair, and you know he lives in Red Wing, so he comes up. You'll see him around here fairly regularly. So, but they actually do the paperwork for the State Soldiers Assistance Program. That's a nice segue into the County Veteran Service Officer Grant. This is a brand new initiative last year. So the County Veteran Service Officers are 100% funded by the counties. They were created in 1943, and they have basically been an unfunded mandate for the counties ever since then. The statute says each county has to have a county service officer, but there's absolutely no money provided. So there's great variance throughout the state as to salaries and hours and working conditions. So the last year, especially with the huge influx of new veterans, a grant was created to help with the needs of a specific county. The county service officers apply for it. What are the needs in Goodhue County as opposed to Pennington? It's not for us to tell a county what to do. They tell us within parameters. We do, and by the way, I don't know how much detail you want to go into today, but I mean it's not just a dollar amount split up. They have to come in with the request how they're going to spend it. A big use will probably be transportation in some of the rural counties. That's a big issue. Another big use is to get information, in other words, marketing or outreach to the veterans in their community. A theme that I haven't said yet, but I said the other day and will say a couple more times today, less than 50% of veterans know about or apply for the benefits that they have coming. It's just such a need to get the word out. So many service officers will be using it to do some form of outreach within their counties. The process for the service officer, it's on our website in detail, and the applications. So as much detail as you want, we can provide you with. Last year it was budgeted at $200,000 a year. Now $200,000 is not a lot for 87 counties. Nearly a half of that, or about a half, we don't know quite because we're right in the middle of that, will go for the counties. At the latest count, there's over 40 county service officers that will be going to Fort McCoy when the 3,000 soldiers come home. They come home in one fell swoop in groups of 300. Each one of them will be talked to about benefits. Applications for hospital will be taken. It's an incredible undertaking. We'll have staff there, and as I said, 40 county service officers at latest count. They are meeting with people from the Guard, with us, with, you know, we have on, there's a lot of planning going on. And part of this service officer grant can provide some of the travel expenses for the various counties all around, you know. Obviously, someone like Steve Stone and Pete Gerber would have a greater travel need than Bob Davis and Red Wing, but part of this funding will be going for that type of service. There's been an ongoing grant for county service officers for many years. It's as you see, it's the bottom of page 3. It's $177,000. That is divided up around the state. The dollar amount is based on population. It is the county service offices qualify for that every third year, and that is primarily for computers and related items to keep their technology current. There's a very restricted list as to what that fund can be used for. That has remained unchanged. War orphan educational benefits, beginning of page 4, it's a very small small program. That there are two aspects of that. One is there is a one-time $750 grant to a veteran who's been going to school and exhausted all their benefits. We have probably 10 or 12 veterans that qualify, that meet that qualification a year. It's a very small amount. But the other side of it is we provide an educational grant of $750 to the category called war orphans, which are the children of deceased veterans. And meanwhile, the state system provides free tuition. So there is a tuition waiver and a one-time $750 payment from our agency. So that is last year, 70 war orphans met that qualification. So again, it's a very small program. Then non-financial programs within the benefits section is veterans preference, which is very confusing because there's federal veterans preference, there's state, there's veterans preference, many different definitions of that. The one that we administer is the one where you get 5 points or 10 points if you are applying for, say, a county job, public job. It's not in the private sector. It's only for school districts, things of that nature. So you get points. It doesn't move you to the head of a line, but you get points, which can move you up in the category. But here is the one I think that you might hear of, because things like school districts or cities or counties sometimes get caught with the need for a veterans preference hearing. All this law does, it says if you are going to fire someone, they do have a right for a hearing. It has nothing to do with what they're going to be fired for. It doesn't say that there's a higher level that is necessary before dismissal. It merely says that a veteran gets a right for a hearing. And that, I think, is pretty much, years ago, a lot of public institutions sort of were confused about that. And there are horror stories out about how, oh my goodness, you have to pay $500,000. Well, that's maybe much, but I mean, they got caught out with merely not allowing an administrative hearing to be held. So I think we are planning on publicizing this much more, having much more information available to county, city, school districts, et cetera, so that is a non-budget item, but it's within our program. Then we move into our services division, which is the claims division, outreach, veteran service organizations, and then we get a special revenue account from the Support Our Troops license plates. But the claims is something that we're very proud of. It's my personal background. Our Deputy Commissioner Mike Pugliese, it's his background. Those of you that came around remember that since 1870, attorneys can only get $10 for representing veterans. So this is advocacy service that is provided at no charge to the veteran by states and by service organizations. We have an agreement, well, it is actually statute within the VA. They provide office space and telephone lines. If we will hire the staff and train them and not charge for the services and act as advocates. So we are given office space in the regional office at Fort Snelling, and the VA regional office, remember, is separate from the hospital. Everybody knows the VA hospital, but a VA regional office exists to give out the actual benefits, compensation, pension, burial, education, that type of thing. Every state has at least one. In Minnesota, we have the regional office at Fort Snelling in the Bishop Henry Whipple Federal Building. But the 15 northwestern counties send their work to the Fargo VA regional office, which has, of course, the name implies all of North Dakota, but the 15 northwestern counties. And that is set in place by the VA. And so we do have a Fargo office and a Fort Snelling office. And there you see, in last calendar year, over veterans we represented, we got $211 million and that's money right in their pockets. That is by compensation, pension, things of that nature. And as you see, it breaks down, $188.6 million come to veterans throughout most of the state, and the 15 northwestern counties, there's $22.6 million that goes to the 15 northwestern counties. Our 06-07 base is $1.5 million. total of 14.5 FTEs. And then sort of a subset of that is outreach, which was, it actually starts September 04 with one person as a trial, and it has proved to be very successful. And this is, outreach is where you actually track down face-to-face, if necessary, minority veterans, women veterans, the economically disadvantaged veterans, homeless, things of that nature. We track them down to actually get a claim filed for pension or compensation. They are notoriously underserved. And this program is quite new. We are working on more exact numbers. We want to get an absolute number. But see, it overlaps with our regular claims office. We know it's over $1 million per year that they're getting. And I'm sorry, I can't be more exact than that. But we are working on a new reporting system so we can break it right down to the dollar, because there is, like I say, overlap between our claims office and the people in outreach. So the veteran service organizations have received funding from the time that our department was created in 1943. It created our claims office, but it the original language dealt with money directly to the DAV, Disabled American Veterans, which was the only office already in existence when this legislation was passed.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Yeah. Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Dyrud, do you happen to have the statute number of the 1870 veterans paying $10?
No, I can certainly get that, though.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Yes, it was passed by Congress it was July of 1870. I don't know if it's like July 8th. That's burned in my head, but I don't know the number.
Thank you.
There have been some recent changes, however, in that allows attorneys to get involved at the level of appeals. And this is brand new. This is just coming out. So, this is a whole new issue that is moving at the federal level. So, but the initial claims in Minnesota, we are so set with that initial claims work support. And I think I mentioned out when you were over, I think I mentioned that only 26 states have county veteran service officers. So Minnesota is really fortunate, and we have this working relationship that exists. The service organizations, the original intent was, since attorneys cannot function, if you just said the state will provide this service, it would be sort of it doesn't give many options or many opportunities to veterans. So the service organizations provide that advocacy service also. So, as I said, in 43, the only office in existence at that time was the Disabled American Veterans. The statute said that we would provide that service to service organizations if they wanted us to. The American Legion and the VFW said, fine, we want you to provide that service. The VFW, 9 months later, moved to their own independent claims office, which exists to this day. And to this day, our department, State Department of Veterans Affairs Claims Office, provides that service for the American Legion. And so it gets very confusing when you hear our office of Fort Sill referred to as American Legion. We're actually state. But there's also, since the 40s, not only is the VFW claims office exists, the DAV already exists, so they're still in existence, but the military or the Purple Heart has a claims office. Vietnam Veterans of America has a claims office. Paralyzed Veterans of America has a claims office, and I believe I'm forgetting one right now. But historically, in the state, the four organizations have received a stipend from the state for their work. Disabled American, they're listed there. Disabled American Veterans, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. And we in the department have always viewed the service organizations as providing an extension of the services that we do. And again, I want to make very clear, the money that has come from the state from 1943 forward is for direct service to veterans. It is not for just the organization as such. So what we will talk about the changes down the road. But these are the four organizations that are in the system right now, and two of them have been in the system since 1943. So anyway, then we do have a Support Our Troops license plate. You might have seen it. There's an eagle. That's actually Harriet from the Wabasha Eagle. I mean, Eagle Center. There's a Support Our Troops red, white, and blue with an eagle. The revenue from there is split between the Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs. Military Affairs use it for their Family Appreciation Fund, Family Support Fund. We use it for the service organizations and for Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, which serves homeless veterans. We'll be talking about them in a minute. So we have this new source of revenue, which we will talk about. Well, I may as well say right now, it was projected at a far greater amount than we actually got. The motor vehicle projected it would sell as well as the loon plate did, and it hasn't. So, and you will see in the budget pages, the income from the Sport Troops license plate is nowhere near what was projected. So, and that is some of the change items that we will be dealing with in a short time here. Then moving on, we have the departmental operations, which includes our state cemetery up by the by Fort Ripley. We have web development, one-stop shopping for veterans on the web. We have higher education assistance offices on the campus, and then of course admin services, which is the usual cost of running an agency. Cemetery in Little Falls, Representative Doty, as you well know, it's in your district. The cemetery was created in 1986 or 87, somewhere in that neighborhood. State cemeteries receive a great deal of startup funding and operating funds from the federal government. So we have federal dollars coming in for this. We have, as you see there, about in 2006, in the calendar year, we had 283 burials. We have, it's just a beautiful place. Those of you that haven't been there, really, it's just gorgeous. And we have a Memorial Day service on the Sunday of Memorial Day, because most Memorial Day events are on the Monday. So we have an event there Sunday afternoon on Memorial Day weekend. And now, but it's over 2,000 people now. I mean, they're parking, you know, you got to park and walk forever to get there. I mean, it's just a wonderful place. So we're quite proud of that. Last year, we got funding to create a one-stop website for veterans. There's so much on the web, and it goes in so many directions. And we are quite proud of what we have done, and we are really starting to advertise this a lot. And we have a new brochure we're working on, which we'll make sure that all of you get. We've got funding for this starting in year two of this biennium. It was not officially open until November, or I don't remember, December 15th. So we did some scrambling behind the scenes to get organized, get it designed, and we pulled together anything dealing with veterans is on this website. And it's very, very much like the name implies, one-stop shopping for the veteran. And whether they're in Iraq or in the East Coast or right here in Minnesota, they can go to this. We are working with other agencies, so they will link back to us, and we will link back and forth. And we think it's a very very well organized, it's a clean design, simple design. People can burrow down to even to the level of taking applications for various programs, find their way back, and you can travel down, you know, work-related issues, health-related issues, retiree. We have, you know, some basic headings that they can start burrowing down into. We're quite proud of it. And then we have the program called Higher Education Veterans Assistance Offices and Campuses. And this is quite a dramatic development. And I think it's quite dramatic that our gentleman who we contracted to run that program just walked in the back of the room up there, Don Pfeffer. This program, the people that work in the program are referred to as campus reps. And this was created because, and I think I pointed this out in our informal meetings, there's such a small percentage of veterans, of the population now who are veterans, that the VA will no longer provide the campus rep programs like they did after Vietnam. And I think the statistic I used is after, you know, during World War II, one in every four families had someone serving, an uncle, a brother, or, you know, whatever. Vietnam, because of the length, ended up having one in ten families was involved. They had someone involved in Vietnam. This war, it's less than half of 1% of families have someone serving in Iraq. So the numbers are not there for the VA to do this nationwide. They simply are not doing that. And the campus reps, in a nutshell, it's a live body to talk to the veterans that are coming back to school. The other alarming statistic that I think I shared before is 30% of combat veterans or veterans just getting onto service drop out in the first quarter or semester of school. It is overwhelming to come from a combat zone or active duty and come into school. It's just an incredibly high dropout rate. And since this program, we are proud to say we got this in place by the time school started in August. And since then, we have had about 1,700 unique contacts with veterans. And we have the campus reps placed in six locations around the state. And I want to now draw your attention to this document, which is the report to the legislature about the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Offices on Campuses. A nice long title, but and it's certainly not our point to read this one either. But I think you see on page six, it talks about, you know, the breakdown of the status. I think what's interesting is that we do have a lot of family members coming in and asking questions, because there's a much higher incidence of family members with this new group of veterans. They have spouses and or children. So then if you keep going, starting on page eight are some real nuts and bolts numbers about the type of people that have been using the services. Then we start on page 10. We break it down by the regions, and you can see within there, for example, on page 10, you'll see that the Northwest, we have Dave Belfi stationed in Moorhead, MSU. You see that there were no programs previously established, and newly established, he's had contact with the list there. Moving on to, go to the Central Region, which is the middle of page 11. You will see that we have a campus rep at St. Cloud. No, you will see the Central Region Campus Veterans Center, that there was one established before that in Central Lakes in Brainerd. And then where are the new ones? So it breaks it down by regions around the state. You see we pretty much have the state covered, and you can see what was in existence at some level and what has been newly established. Central Lakes College, Don Pepper, whom we contracted for his services, he had taken a sabbatical and actually set up a fully functioning campus rec center at Central Lakes. So this is really his passion. And so we were fortunate to contract with Minsky for his services rather than reinvent the wheel and start with scratch. We contracted for his services, and then he helped us as we hired the campus reps. We're so proud of that, and that has such a direct impact on veterans, because not only do they help veterans with just the nuts and bolts of getting their GI Bill, which can be a real hassle for a veteran coming back, but they are trained to hook them in and refer them to, say, county veteran service offices or, you know, other services and that are available for veterans. Again, tying into less than 50% of veterans know about any of the benefits available to them. That's a theme that I keep hammering on. So we are so pleased with how quickly that has gotten off the ground. Then admin services, that's our the rest of the agency, as they say. We do accept donations, you know, through this service. We were getting quite a large amount of donations for the World War II Memorial, which is now almost done. But Then we move on to the non-financial programs within our department. The RSVP program, that is a very wonderful little service that we provide in connection with Department of Employment and Economic Development. We get the DD-214s for many of Minnesota's returning veterans, not all. And the reason the DD-214, that's the separation paper or the discharge paper that a veteran gets upon leaving the service. So that's kind of it's a form number, but it's one that's always in use in the veterans community. So the discharge paper, in other words, when a young man or woman leaves the service, they have to check a block. It says they want a copy of this DD-214 to go to their state of record. So we are dependent on a veteran to check that block. If they check that block, we do get a copy of it. Down the road, it's not the quickest thing, but we do get a copy of it. When we get a copy of that, we have a whole packet ready to go. We send a letter out with a list of county service officers. It's a summary of, telling them, hey, welcome home, and you have, there's a lot of things that you can and should check into. And we send, the veteran service officers get that also. So we try to track them down. But again, it's all dependent on them checking that block. So that is, and the other theme that I want to introduce here that I've talked about in the past and will hear again is that in Minnesota, the veteran that is flying below the radar is the one coming back from active duty. The Minnesota National Guard knows, they know who went over, they know who's coming back, and they know when they're coming back. The people that come, the active duty soldiers, are coming back one by one. And there's no central collection point. If they happen to check this block, we'll get their 214, but there is no listing. There's no way of tracking those soldiers down. If you run into any, constituents or whatever, hook them in with at least a county service officer. Make sure that they understand that they are welcome to, because the Guard has ceremonies which are open to the public, but sometimes the soldier thinks it's only for the Guard, and what about us, So that is an underlying theme that we have. So if you, with constituents, if you run into that, be sure to funnel them into the system. There's something there for them. We also have a state approving agency, which is totally funded federally. But we have four people that are housed in our area. The federal, the VA, checks on schools to make sure that they meet certain criteria, and they fully fund, they contract with each state to provide the physical bodies that do that. That's called the state approving agency. So they are part of our agency, but are completely federally funded. So that is a quick overview of what we had. Then we're going to talk a little bit about our change requests. I didn't formally introduce everyone that's in the audience. I don't know if they need, but if looking out, you'll see a lot of hats. We have World War II veterans here. We have department commanders. Department, now for those of you, department means state. So we have the state American Legion commander. We have the state John Cox. We have the state Jewish War Veterans commander. World War II veterans, Ted Schmuckler. We have the state military, the Purple Heart commander, Clayton Ehrman. But we also have, we have Jerry Kaiser, who's chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. We have Al Lair from the VFW. He's our legislative chairman. He used to be the commissioner back in the 60s, so he keeps me on the straight and narrow. David Claypool from the American Ex, he's the state president for the American Ex-Prisoners of War. And we also have, I'm sorry, I'm not going to introduce everyone by name. Oh, well, I almost have. There's Bill Rooley is in the back, the Military Order of the Purple Heart. We have Bob Connor, Military Order of the Purple Heart. We have Dean Ashman. He's an adjutant from Disabled American Veterans. We have Joe Shermer from the VFW. We have Ralph Delnay from the TRIA, which is the Retired Enlisted Association. We have Jim Hesselgrave, who is the quartermaster of the VFW, combat photographer in Vietnam. And I think I hopefully I Oh, Jimmy Lee Colfard, who is the founder of MACV that we'll be talking about over here. I think I introduced the... Who am I missing? Oh, Anna Marie Hill is here from the Indian Affairs Council. So, and she's Executive Director of Indian Affairs Council, and Jolene Chopkey's from that office. Pat Turgeon is from our Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. She's worked with us for a total of, is it 1 month yet or not?
No, 3 weeks.
3 weeks. 3 weeks. So we're hiring quality people. I hope I didn't leave anyone out. That's the danger of giving names, but we're very happy that they are here today. Now we get to the change request.
You did a very nice job, Commissioner. I have a hard time remembering the names of the new members around the table, and you went right through them in good shape. So, and we do look forward to all you folks hopefully stopping by and visiting with us in our offices or coming and testifying as we get more in-depth in the budgets in the future. You're always welcome to the table, and we do want to hear from you. So,
now, I'm going to start talking faster because time is becoming of the essence. If I start talking too fast, you let me know, and I'll have to slow down a little bit. Here, and we're going into our change requests. Number one, on page 9 at the top, it's Veterans Affairs Outreach and Communications. There are three areas of that. The first is an initiative for tribal veteran service officers. This is new. This would be roughly seven or eight FTEs for the northern, primarily for the northern tribes. 30% of Native Americans are veterans. It's by far the highest service rate of any group. And remember earlier I was saying how less than 50% of veterans come forward and ask for benefits. You increase that exponentially on the northern reservations especially. You have combat veterans who are living in poverty who are fully eligible for benefits and have never come forward. And also they would be eligible for various services also. What we are proposing would be depending on how it would shake out with FTEs, it's 8 FTEs, how that would be split up among the northern tribes. They would be department employees, so the governor is very concerned that there be accountability as to, that we make sure that they are doing the job that they would be hired for. And so they would be serving, we would work in connection with each of the northern tribes to hire someone that is known in that community. And they would be working directly with the veterans in their communities. And this is something that Minnesota has never had tribal service officers. Many states do. Minnesota hasn't. And we have the large population. I think we want to make clear that Prior Lake and Shakopee are not, Prior Lake and Prairie Island are not included. I think it's well known that they have a large income. It's publicized as such, and sometimes in the general public there's the idea that that is true across the Native American reservations. That is not the case, but they are also not included in this. So this would be a way of getting help to the veterans who have most of the Native American veterans. By the way, are combat veterans. They always volunteer for combat duty. They have a long, proud warrior tradition, and the Native Americans really are honor their veterans, and they lead. They are introduced and lead the powwows and events, and I think this is a way to really help get benefits to the people that need it. And you talk about a return on a win-win, because the return on the federal dollars that would come in as a result of that would completely overwhelm what it would cost to fund that. So $1.5 million would go for that. We have something called the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans that has been around for years. Jimmy Lee Colfard was the founder of that. It started with just an idea in Jimmy's head, and he's full of ideas, by the way. But anyway, it has grown over the years. This is way back... and I don't remember the year, but we were tasked with doing something for homeless veterans. We started meeting with groups. MACV was already in existence and going, so we have been giving a small amount, rather than reinvent the wheel, our portion for homeless veterans. We have just, rather than try to start something from scratch, as I said, we have given them a small amount for our share of helping homeless veterans. What we are looking for is actual operation funding for MACV. They exist in Minneapolis, St. Paul, St. Cloud, Duluth, Mankato. They could expand, with services. They are a nonprofit. Accountability, you get a report to stick from them. I mean, there's recently the legislative auditor, there's stuff in the paper about, nonprofits and accountability. Well, I actually smiled when I read that report because the reports are overwhelming. I mean, they are an open book, and they won't give you the Social Security numbers, but they will darn near give you a life story of the people they help. They take someone off the street all the way through to employment, and they work with them. They get them medical help or et cetera if necessary, and they keep working with them. They have gotten bonding money from the state on several occasions, but they've never gotten operating funds. And so what happens is that the number of people that they help sort of, when they run out of operating funds, they kind of ratchet back, and then as they get funding, they increase the number of people they work with. So it's already existing, a long track record, and they work with someone, as I say, from the street all the way into full employment, while, as I say, sending them off to VA for medical if necessary, or mental health treatment, or chemical dependency. So they are real well established within the veterans system. They are kind of well known in the veterans community. So this would be operation funding for them. We also have in there $500,000 for a 1-800 line to go with our website and to start doing some serious marketing. This is a real big issue right now with the veterans coming back, marketing or getting the word out. And so we have there's $500,000 there for that. Increased money to the service officer grant. We're asking for a $2.8 million there. With the one-time kicker, if you will, of $500,000, one-time money, but the general funding would be $2.8. As I said, there's 87 counties. This gives right now it's $200,000. There's not much that can be done with 87 counties with that. So hopefully, with the increase, they would be able to seriously do some programs around their state. Around their county. And as I said earlier, it's up the counties would know what is their biggest need in their part of the state. So we really are hoping to get an increase in the grant for them. And the one time, as I said, would help out with this big influx of veterans.
Representative Wilk.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to Commissioner Dyrud. Local County Veterans Services Officer reported to me that she's been seeing an increase in the number of Vietnam veterans that are coming forward now because the Vietnam veterans are retiring out of the workforce, and with the retirement there come some issues. And so I'm wondering, when you're looking at the 12% increase in your base budget for these grants, are you hearing from a number of county veteran services officers around the state that they're seeing an increase in need from our veterans, not only those returning from the current conflicts, but from past conflicts as well as they're retiring or other issues are coming about?
Commissioner Dyrud?
Chair, Representative Welty, thank you for asking that question, because in our business, we commonly believe that the workload would be going down when the World War II veteran retired. And, all Democrats, including from the VA, was projecting that, the workload would go down. Starting in the 90s, the workload has shot up. And what has driven, and exactly what you say, the usage by Vietnam veterans has just gone up exponentially. There's two or three reasons for that. One, of course, is age. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I'm above 60, and that's about the age that we are now. But we also have, thanks to the, there's something called the Court of Veterans Appeals, which has made changes in how the VA gives some of these compensation benefits. And they have opened it up to new groups of primarily Vietnam veterans. Some of the cancers relating to Agent Orange, for example. There have been, made the VA start paying attention to real hearing loss caused by exposure to noise. Before, if the veteran didn't have hearing loss in their separation medical exam, there's no way they could get it. So, you know, they have been forced to be a little more realistic about some of the benefits. You put that all together, and with Vietnam, there's one last kicker. Vietnam veterans came back and tended to be very independent. They weren't joiners. There was that whole issue of what the political structure was like at that time. And the Vietnam veterans didn't join service organizations for a long time. They're starting to now. And they went their own way. And now they are starting to come forward. So you put that all together, and there's just a huge increase in Vietnam veteran usage, but also in other veterans, you know, because of some of the changes in the VA. So the numbers, I remember in 1 year when I was in the claims office, we had a 40% increase in the number of claims. It was just dramatic. I mean, and you know, the numbers just took off. We'd been flatlining, and all of a sudden, it took off like that. So I think that's a very accurate statement. The higher ed campuses, we are asking for $1.8 million, and there too a one-time appropriation of $500 for the large influx coming back. That would fund about 12 FTEs, and we again would have them around the state. So this is something that they're not. Obviously, we only have one in the metro area. We need more than one in the metro area. But having said that, we need more around the state because the returning veterans come to 585 communities. You look on a map, if you put a dot on there, there's dots everywhere in the state. So, I mean, this is a very successful program. By the way, this does have a sunset in it. If the veterans drop below a certain number, veterans using going to school, in other words, using the GI Bill, drop below a certain number, it'd be revisited. Even if the numbers don't go down, it's going to be revisited in 2011. And, you know, this, you know, there will be sort of a sunset built into this. So so that is, as long as there's a need, hopefully we would be able to deal with it. The State Soldiers and Assistance Program, we're asking for the $2 million increase, which would bring us up then to what we asked for originally. And we would bring be able to, again, remember, this deals with that, the special needs program, the temporary financial assistance, and the dental and optical, which hadn't been increased forever. So this is the actual money for the safety net. The veteran service organizations, we have right now our base budget funds only about half of the dollars for the money going to the service organizations. The rest goes from the support our troops plates. That actually is not, you know, the revenue is nowhere near what we are expecting. What we are proposing with the $500,000 is it will fund in the base the funding for the service organizations. By the way, we do have a formula that describes the service organizations that have the claims office get a fixed amount based on the size. We get figures from the VA, so we know the size of the operations. They get a fixed figure. There's also a per member factor that we put in. I mean, we have a formula which certainly am willing to go into a great length. But the $500,000 would do, it would stabilize funding for the existing organization, and it does open the door, and there are very few that would qualify. It does open the door for existing programs that serve veterans. We are not trying to do startup funding here. We are not trying to give just to an organization for fundraising, but there are organizations, the American Legion is one that has, you know, we do the claims for them, but they have a whole hospital network, and they have other programs, so that's just one example. There wouldn't be many other, but the possibility would exist. They would obviously get only a per member, so their dollar amount wouldn't be as great as the organizations that run a full claims operation. But we are trying to stabilize the funding for the service organizations and help all of them that are really having programs that are in existence for veterans. So then we're moving on to State Cemetery. It's a $150,000 increase for that would go to our base for funding of staff. We haven't gotten that in the past. We actually have been taking cemetery from our staff position pool for down at central office. The increase in information technology is we've worked with OEP, Office of Office of Enterprise Technology. We have been working with them. This is primarily software. The example I use was it last summer or a little bit longer. One day, if somebody typed into our webpage, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs webpage, they got a picture of Osama bin Laden. We got hijacked our splash page. They didn't get into our actual page, but they got into our splash page that first came up. So it was about 6 hours, we had to break the system down and they had to, work on that. But there, it's just an amazing, being a state or federal agency, hackers are just, you're just a natural target just to see what they can do. And so, this is primarily all dealing with, software type issues and firewall and things of that nature. But we were working with OEP on that. Admin resources. This is come through Department of Finance, and here the best way to give the background to this is a year ago last August. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs front office consisted of me and the deputy commissioner. I mean, that's the position that we're coming from. We have been so small for so long. We were reorganizing our whole department, and we have, for example, we hired a legislative person was that August or September? We hired Pat 3 weeks ago. We hired a real finance. That's not the right way to put it. I mean, we hired someone from the Department of Finance who had background in state finance issues. So we are moving forward. As I said at the outset, we got a great increase, and now we have to get the structure to deal with that, and so this is very beneficial to just be able to work with what we have and move forward. So, and then the compensation adjustment, I think that's pretty universal this year. It's built into most agencies. For us, it's $191,000. The cost of living adjustments. That is requested across the state agency. The other change items going on to page 11, the War Orphans Act, remember I talked about that is for children of deceased veterans. What we're asking to is change the language so it includes the spouse of a deceased veteran. So it's not a big item. There are 70 people that used it last year. At maximum it would be $105,000. But the money actually comes out from the State Soldiers Assistance Program. So what we are looking for is actually a language change that would allow us. I mean, we can't do that right now without language change that allows it to be the spouse as well as the children. The last two items. And again, Chair Junkie, we started to talk about this right at the beginning of the hearing privately. We're not sure yet how the governor's initiatives for veterans and military affairs, how many bills will be involved here. So, but as you know, and it was announced, there is the Minnesota GI Bill for veterans that will be tracked through higher ed. There's also the non-taxation of military pay, which will be tracked through tax. And what's also not before this committee, but we are together in the Senate, is military affairs. So they remained, I understand, in government ops here in the House. Is that not correct?
At this point, yeah.
So we do know that in the House there was a bill for the Minnesota GI Bill introduced, I'm sorry that I am so ignorant as to how many other bills will be involved in this. But this is, like I say at the outset, you move fast in agriculture here. So I think normally, towards the end of the month, it'll be very clear how many bills are going to be involved. So, but I'm certainly, I don't know if you want to have us talk at all about the Minnesota GI Bill or the exemption of tax pay, or it's not really, I don't know that it would, it certainly could come through policy.
The commissioner and members, again, we don't know how all this is going to be, if it'll go as separate bills, if we'll assemble them into one bill at the end in a Veterans Affairs bill with all of this after they've gone to the different committees. But certainly we have a peripheral interest in all of this. We do want to know, as a Veterans Affairs Finance Committee, what's going on over in the other committees, because we do want to, supposedly we're the experts on it this year in this committee, and we want to keep track of what our other folks are doing. But so I don't know that we have to go into it right now in great detail, but we may look at that sometime in the future. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on the GI Bill, though, Commissioner, and that's is there a time limit on this? In other words, my question would be, how long would a veteran, is there a time limit from when a veteran is discharged to use this the Minnesota GI Bill?
Commissioner Dyer?
Chair Junkie, Representative Magnus, no. Which makes it different from the federal VA, which has a 10-year time limit.
Okay, so I could go back to school yet and get some help.
Chair Dyer? Representative Magnus, we've actually discussed that, and the effective date starting date would be August of 90, which was the beginning of Gulf War I. I mean, that's exactly the discussion we had, was where, how would you start?
Well, in my question, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, was because of the need we see, and you talked about it, when you come out of those situations, it's tough to go back to school.
Exactly.
And I've been through it, so I know what it's all about. But as we look at the changing world we're living in here, and the need to go back for continuing education, and who knows what goes on in your career's change and everything like that. There's something we should look at probably as we look at someone that's been out of the service for a period of time and is looking at some education needs for career changes possibly or requirements. That's something we should probably look at.
Commissioner? Here. Representative Magnus, and that's exactly the point of not having the time limit, because someone can be doing a profession and maybe health changes everything more than 10 years down the road. So that's exactly the point, is to have no time limit on that, on the usage. Chair Junkie, there is, as you maybe see, there is a limit as to dollar amount. I mean, this is not the so-called free tuition that Wisconsin is talking about. And I think I mentioned to one of you, or one group informally, the free tuition in Wisconsin really isn't free. It is an unfunded mandate for their schools. They are going back. It hasn't kicked in yet. They are going back in this legislative session. They're asking for $24 million as a starting point to pay for totally free tuition for everyone. In Minnesota, it'd be quite a bit higher than that, probably. So this is, I think, is a little more realistic. It gives some. It's also last dollar in, which is we think is important to make sure that the students have applied for Pell Grants, state aids, GI Bill, everything, to maximize all of that, and then come in. So there are some considerations on that line. We think that it will help, and actually it's a maximum amount of $1,000 per semester. So I mean, there are some limits.
Representative Magnus and Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. And I see also here it's the Minnesota school or institutions only. Is that correct too?
Chair, Representative Magnus. Yes, and it would also include, say, the 2-year colleges or tech colleges. It would include private colleges. I mean, because it goes to the veterans. I mean, there's no Minnesota school that would be exempt, or I mean, where a veteran could not use or be eligible for this Minnesota GI Bill.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie. And to Commissioner Dyrud, I have a few questions about the Veterans Assistance Offices, and because I served on the Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Committee for the past 2 years, so I was aware when this bill came forward and the appropriation, and I thought it was very worthwhile, but I have some follow-up questions, and I don't know if you want to answer them or defer them, but when Representative Severson brought forward the bill, I think we had discussed that we wouldn't necessarily have full-time employees at all of the campuses, that we'd hire people to serve those campuses to meet the needs of the students that were there based upon the populations and the need. I see that we're going to have regional offices or regional coordinators that are going to be employed full-time, and then you will also have officers at the campuses, if I'm correct on that. So I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Commissioner Mayer,
Chair Drunke, Representative Welty. I think when the bill was first being talked about last year, there's a considerably larger number that we were talking about of FTEs, and the bill was considerably larger. How this is shaken out, and it's in this report. If you look back, we've placed the campus reps at 6 places. If we are fortunate enough to get an increase, they will continue to serve directly there. The population is just that their range will probably shrink. Now they're going all around in a district, so we would probably place. There's nowhere near. Let me back up and say we are not putting a rep at every facility. There was some talk, I think, maybe in some of the committees last year about maybe hiring a whole bunch of, say, quarter FTEs or half FTEs and physically getting that kind of coverage. But there's a real problem with getting a knowledge base for someone that is just working peripherally in this field. So what we are accomplishing, we use some teleconferencing, we use obviously the computers, the web, but the number of campus reps would increase, but it would not increase to I think the level that was first talked about at the beginning of last session.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and a follow up to Commissioner Dyrud. And the reason I'm asking the question is that I just want to make sure that we are serving the populations that we intended to serve and they're being served efficiently, and I have no doubt that you're using your resources currently as efficiently as possible, but I'm wondering if you need more services and where those need to be. Because as I look through the list, I think I looked at Winona State University. They may not have a person serving that campus right now, and I thought that's a relatively large campus, but I just briefly skimmed through this. So I just want to make sure that if you need the services, if there are campuses that need to be served, that we do put the resources forward. And then second of all, there are initiatives across the state that really want to target certain populations, and I just want to make sure that those populations are targeted. And so I'm wondering when a You said that it's easy to track, for instance, a National Guard member because you know the Minnesota National Guard members are coming back and where they're going to go. Don't necessarily have that same ability with members of the armed forces, the various armed forces. So when students arrive on campus, are the campuses asking if they have served in the military previously? Are those people being personally contacted? Are we actually making a personal contact with each service member when they arrive on a campus so they are aware of the services that are available? That's what, I guess that's my major question that I'd like answered. Or is it a blanket approach and we're hoping that these individuals come forward to find out what services are available?
Well, it looks like we have someone coming down that can maybe help us out. Please, have a seat. Introduce yourself for the tape, and did you hear Representative Welty's question?
My name is Don Pfeffer. I'm the Director of the Higher Education Veterans Programs, part of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'd be very happy to address your questions. The identification of veterans attending colleges depends on the college. Some campuses are doing a very good job of identifying, and some are not doing as well. That's a good job. That's part
Don,
of what our point is.
Nice view of your hands on the screen behind you there. So.
This technology.
All right. Mr. Pfeffer, continue.
Yes. Depending on the campus, and we are working effectively with our coordinators to improve that information on campuses so that it can come forward. We know we have a long way to go yet. So that's variable. But that the missing population, the active duty personnel, is a major concern of ours, and that is one of the initiatives we need to look at this next year to get a better handle on that.
Chair Junkie?
Commissioner Dyrud.
I would just like to add to that a component of the Minnesota GI Bill is that any veteran would have to come through the finance office to ask about that. There would be publicity about that. And they would be geared up with through the campus rep system, but also through training. So now someone would come forward and say, hey, what about this? They would get the whole packet of information. It might help them apply for state education grants they didn't even know existed. It might. An ongoing problem is a lot of veterans don't apply for Pell Grants they think are not eligible, and they are. And so, but it would be one more point of contact to get the veterans who haven't come forward, to get them identified, hook them into personal contact with campus reps.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, Commissioner, has to do with something that perhaps doesn't pertain to this committee, but I need a verification on that. In regards to nursing home care, okay, is that a federal issue or a state issue?
Mr. Dyer?
Chair, Representative Heigerken. The Minnesota Veterans Homes are state operated. There is a board appointed by the governor, a 9-member board appointed by the governor,
mm-hmm.
who oversees the Minnesota Veterans Homes. Now, they get per diems from the federal government, from the VA.
Right.
So your question is a little more complex than a simple yes or no. I mean, the oversight of the state veterans' homes is state, but there's a high percentage of federal dollars coming into them.
Okay.
Representative Heiger.
It's just a follow-up, and the reason that I've always wanted to bring this up is that within my district, one of the complaints, that when I go to VA at St. Cloud, for example, and an uncle there, that wanted to be put in to a nursing home close to home where all of his friends are. I've got a couple of them in Belgrade that would love to be in Belgrade rather than St. Cloud where their friends are. Is the problem more of a fallout of funds? Is this, there are no choices? Is there a choice of federal funds or state funds following the veteran to a nursing home within their district?
Commissioner Dyrud?
Chair Junkie, Representative Heidrich, I want to be sure that I'm answering the question. Are you asking if there can be more Minnesota veterans' homes in the state, or are you talking about money following them from, like, VA benefits following them to a private nursing home?
I've been with, thank you. I've been with the first issue because I try to work with, I know they're looking at putting another new VA up within the state of Minnesota, and that's a different issue. But what I'm looking at is, see, if there's a veteran of the Second World War that wants to be in a nursing home within his town, my understanding is that in order for him to receive the veteran benefits, he has to be in a VA. That the VA, those monies will not follow the VA to the independent nursing home wherever he may want to be within his community.
Commissioner Dyrud?
Chair Junkie, Representative Heidgerken. Now, let me see, there's about two or three issues there. The VA mm-hmm. used to, especially St. Cloud, they used to provide nursing home care ongoing at the St. Cloud especially. That was a lifetime. Mm-hmm. They in the 80s, they started changing their guidelines and moved the long-term residents into private nursing home care. Then, most of the time in the private nursing homes, veterans would qualify for a VA pension. That legislation changed, I don't remember that, was it now in the 80s, was it? It moved to like $90 only for personal needs if you were a veteran in a nursing home. Now, to further complicate matters, there are veterans that if their condition that lands them in a nursing home is considered service-connected, they get higher funds. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's not an easy issue. There's mm-hmm. just so many variables. But the changing of the federal pension to $90 back in the 80s, that had a real devastating effect. It really wiped out a lot of federal dollars for veterans in private nursing homes.
Okay. Thank you. That does answer.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it seems like we're talking about people who risk all and request so little, really. One question, Commissioner. On the governor's proposal, does the funding, does that address your needs that we talked about here today?
Commissioner Dyrud?
Chair Junkie, Representative Hamilton, yes. And we hope that we can get what we request. There are several components. And our department has been involved in bringing forward our needs. And I guess the short answer is yes.
And Representative Hamilton, I think you bring up a good point. And one of our concerns, Commissioner, as this committee works, will be not only the request and the increase in money, but do we have enough people to carry it out and make sure we're doing a good, efficient job? We don't want you to be short-staffed either, quite frankly. You're taking a lot on, and I think that's very good. But I think this committee, as a finance oversight committee, we want to work closely with you to understand and make sure that those needs are being met. And I think that's what Representative Hamilton's alluding to, and it's a very good point.
And Chair Junkie, I would like to again point out that administrative resources on page 10 and the compensation adjustment and state cemetery adjustment up there, that does move in that direction.
So that wasn't just all for an increase in the commissioner's pay?
It wasn't, and I would like to point out to this committee, if I may, that last summer, because of what was going on, I only got to golf twice. I was going to go on record and say that.
Any other questions, members? Tomorrow we're going to have the Department of Agriculture in here doing kind of the same thing, a broad overview so we get understanding of their budget. Next week, just so you can be looking ahead, we're going to have 2 days worth of ag research testimony from privates, AURI, University of Minnesota, and others as we look down the road and maybe perhaps this committee starts thinking about writing the ag special for higher ed. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask that question about the U of M and have them come in here and talk to us about the ag special. So thank you for that.
We're going to, for the members that don't know, since 1910 there's been an ag special. Many times it doesn't get down to our level, and I think it's important the ag finance group actually takes that testimony, understands what our needs are. We'll write it and have someone like Welty and Poppy, who sit over there, carry that bill over to higher ed on our behalf.
and hopefully inserted in Representative Rukavina's bill. So I think it's important we have input on that, and we're going to set the ground for that next week with a couple days of research testimony. I am. All right. Anything else to come before the committee? If not, thank you, members. Meeting is adjourned.